It's 7 minutes past 1 o'clock Central Time. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. We're also available online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet and nutrition. She's with us today, a Tuesday, because yesterday was a holiday. If you'd like to talk with Susan, give us a call. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited this afternoon. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And let us talk with some listeners. We've already got a couple of callers who are joining us on the phone this afternoon. Our first listener to talk with us is in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, Happy New Year.
And to you.
Mm-hmm. And may this year be a year of peace.
And good health for everyone.
Good health. Yes. Exactly.
I'd like to inquire as to the nutritional value of cranberries. My husband thinks it's very strange that I have this addiction to cranberry relish. And as soon as it's available at Jerry's IGA, sometime in the end of October, I eat a quart a week of their cranberry relish until it runs out in January. And I know that cranberry juice is very healthy, and I just wondered, what is the nutritional values in cranberries, whole cranberries, mm-hmm. and is there a downside to consuming so many cranberries?
Well, I think it's a great thing that you like those cranberries because, you know, nutritionally, of course, when we look at different fruits and vegetables, we look at a couple things. You know, on the very basic level, you look at color. And so, of course, cranberries we know will be high in a lot of phytonutrients, phytochemicals, antioxidants, as well as vitamin C and other vitamins and minerals just from the look of it. And cranberries overall, when they're more in a relish, if there's not a lot of sugar added, they're not a real high-calorie fruit. And so let's say if you had a half a cup of cranberry relish, it might be, I'm not sure the exact calories, but certainly 100 calories or fewer probably with that, unless, again, there is a lot of sugar added. So, you know, they're very nutritious, very high in a lot of these nutrients, very good for you. They're certainly acidic. I mean, this is one thing you hear about cranberry and cranberry juice being really helpful to help prevent urinary tract infections. And there's a lot of evidence to support that if someone has chronic urinary tract infections, it actually helps take that bacteria out of the system. And so certainly it's a good idea anyway, just for general health and for immune boosting and just having more of these natural phytochemicals. So I think if you know, it's just basically something you'd count, well, there's one of your fruits during the day, or maybe mm-hmm. in your case, that might be two fruits a day. That's fine. And I certainly would think it'd just be really a high nutrient way to go when they're available.
I can tell my husband not to worry.
That's right. And it's one of those things, like you say, you know, a lot of these seasonal foods, mm-hmm. You're not going to have all the time. And to be able to take advantage, particularly when the relish is freshly made or you can get more of the fresh cranberries, that's fantastic.
So the cranberry relish is not boiled cranberry like the cranberry juice you can get in, not cranberry juice, but the cranberry jellied things that are served at Thanksgiving. So this, they're chopping the raw cranberry.
Mm-hmm, right. So you get a lot more benefit from that as well. And so
I don't think they add sugar. What I think they do is they mix it with whole oranges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that may be the case. And of course, that's going to be very healthy for you as well. So generally, those fresh relishes are just really, really good for you.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Mm. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hello. Woohoo on the cranberries. I'd like to ask about the different types of bad fats found in packaged foods, specifically trans or partially hydrogenated fats versus those that are fully hydrogenated versus saturated fats. I'm curious because it seems to me that nowadays fully hydrogenated fats are being used more and more as a replacement for the much maligned trans fats. Are fully hydrogenated fats less bad then? And how do they stack up against saturated fats? And is a fully hydrogenated fat considered a trans fat? And finally, in terms of cardiovascular health, are they all equally bad or are some worse? I will listen to your answer off the air, and thank you very much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Well, those were all really excellent questions, and I'll try to answer them the best I can. I think if you look at fats in general, there are a couple things to always keep in mind. First of all, the more fats you can get that are more liquid fats generally, fats that are not hardened generally are going to be the best choices. Those are not as hydrogenated. So if you think about, if we look at that term hydrogenated, basically what happens with some fats is they may start out being liquid, and then when they add, when they hydrogenate or add the hydrogens to them and make them a little bit thicker or harder, they generally are more shelf stable, but that also isn't generally as good for you. And so when we think about hydrogenating different fats, that's usually what's happening, is they're becoming harder. So if you look at a lot of products with these partially hydrogenated fats, they put those in basically to make it more shelf stable, to add a little bit harder fat that would last longer on the shelf. And it's similar with trans fat. Trans fat generally takes a fat, particularly a liquid fat, and changes it in some way that it makes it maybe more shelf stable, but at the same time, a little bit more difficult for your body to utilize. And so we think about trans fats, we think about hydrogenated fats, and like you mentioned, fully hydrogenated is being added to a lot of things because there is some distinction. Some of these fully hydrogenated fats are not trans fats because they haven't been changed, and so they don't have to list them as trans fats on the label. However, it is hydrogenated fat, which is often saturated fat, which is more the hard fat, which tends to raise blood cholesterol levels. So this makes it more challenging for us when we read labels. There might be products that say no trans fat, which we're seeing a lot, right? Big, you know, big letters, no trans fat, but actually the amount of saturated fat or hardened fat that's in the product is still high. And so one thing that you can do when you're looking at a product is say, well, for the best bet, I probably want the lowest trans fat and the lowest saturated fat. So not looking just at trans fat, but also at saturated fat, and also looking at the label and saying, well, is there partially hydrogenated fat very high up in the label? It might be way down low, and so it's so little it probably is not a problem, but if it's one of the first few ingredients, then that's not such a good thing either. So I would look at all that together, because we know that trans fat can raise lipids. We know that hydrogenated fat can raise lipids. We know that fully or partly hydrogenated fats are not necessarily healthy. The other thing we know is generally more processed the food, more apt it is to have some of these fats that are not as good for you. So, you know, I guess in a nutshell, I would say when you use fat, use more liquid you can, probably particularly olive oil and canola oil. If you're choosing margarines, probably the light tub margarine that has less fat overall and less hydrogenated fat is much better than a harder margarine in a stick or a harder tub margarine. So those would be better. And there are a lot of good options now on the market that are no trans fat and maybe one or fewer grams of saturated fat that are actually, you know, a lot of water added to that too. I made an omelet the other day and I used some of our tub margarine, which is very low trans fat or no trans fat, very low saturated fat. And when it melts down, you'll see, of course, it's mostly water. When it melts down, there's not a lot of margarine in there, not a lot of butter. But so those are the better choices too. And then when you have an option, we know that it's really good for us to have more of these good fats that might be more olive oil, more olives, more walnuts, more flaxseed, things like that that are more the monounsaturated fat. I hope that answers your question, because it is very confusing.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's give a couple of examples, and then we'll go to our next caller. Monounsaturated fats, what foods are they found in? And polyunsaturated fats, what are they found in? And then the omega-3 fatty acids. Those are the better fats. So they're often labeled good fats, but, you know, everything in moderation, right?
Right, exactly. Okay. Well, if you look at monounsaturated fats, those are often some of the vegetable fats. Some of the things like olive oil would be higher in monounsaturated fat. Many fatty acids, if you look at the fat in food, they'll have different types of fatty acids. So when we talk about monounsaturated fat, it might be that more of that fat is monounsaturated fat for nuts and seeds. You know, sunflower seeds, for example, are a good source of monounsaturated fat. Walnuts are a good source of monounsaturated fats. They also have some omega-3 fats as well. Flaxseed is mostly monounsaturated fat plus some omega-3 fats. So so those are the foods that we would say, well, yeah, probably most of your fat, if we can get them to come from those types of foods, that's probably the best. Fish fat, which is generally omega-3, which is a better type of fat. It's not as saturated. And then when you look at other monounsaturated fats, they might be other vegetable fats or oil fats. And some of the polyunsaturated fats would be things maybe like corn oil and safflower oil, although, again, they're going to be mixed saturation in there. So I guess, you know, the thing you'd want to look for is say, well, if you can get more of these omega-3s or more nuts, more seeds, more olive oil, more corn oil or canola oil.
Yeah, and less of the hydrogenated and saturated fats, the sat fats, the hydrogenated, the partially hydrogenated, and the trans fats, if you can put those on the shelf, so to speak.
And naturally, if you do eat, and this is why we're really, you know, the big push, especially now, I think this year we're just going to see so much more emphasis on eating more, maybe what we'd call clean foods or more foods that are really, really the closer to the earth, the better. I mean, if you can actually think, if you have a salad and you add on a little olive oil and vinegar, well, that's really probably the best thing you can do for a salad. It's olive oil. It's more monounsaturated fat. We're not adding something that's going to be a creamy dressing or a hardened type of thing like that, and add nuts, which is good fat, and we're eating more fruits and more vegetables, and there's really, really a lot of interest in whole grains versus foods that are more processed. So that gets us really back to saying, well, you know, how can we eat more of these foods, which really it's not that difficult now because there are more foods on the market that are more of these whole grains, and fruits and vegetables are easy to find, and you can buy things that are already cut up and all those things, because that helps you, and then adding the fats that we know are better choices.
Okay, let's talk with another listener now. Caller waiting for us on line 3 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I think I've asked you once before about natural versus synthetic versions of vitamins. But I was just reading, there's been a lot of press recently about vitamin D, various aspects of vitamin D, including that higher levels in your blood lowers the risks of multiple sclerosis. But then I was reading that vitamin D2 may not be as effective as vitamin D3, which I gather is an animal-derived. Vitamin D3 is animal-derived. And I was looking, so I started looking at my vitamins, my multivitamin, and I use soy milk on my oatmeal in the morning, and it has vitamin D2. And one article I read wasn't very specific. It said that some researchers think that vitamin D2 is less effective, even perhaps 10 times less effective than vitamin D3. And we're already considered to not be getting nearly enough of it, the recommended daily amounts are way too low. So I was just, you really have to work to figure these things out. I mean, I looked at my vitamins, at the multivitamin from Walgreens, and it didn't say D2 or D3. I had to go back and look at the article to see what the chemical name was for D2 versus D3.
Right.
It really wears people out. And a lot of people just say, I don't have time for all this. Why don't they just make it simple for me?
Right.
But do you have any more information about the D2 versus D3, do you have any other recommendations about which vitamins it's important to look for the, quote, natural version of? And I also want to say that when somebody mentioned this to me originally, he was a carpenter doing some work for us, and he said, my wife is a nurse, and she really thinks, she's been to classes and she thinks only the natural versions are what you should use. And I thought, yeah, right. What's wrong with the synthetic ones? But as it turns out, sometimes a cheaper way to synthesize something doesn't actually produce the same, either exactly mm-hmm. the same chemical composition or the same molecular structure, so your body doesn't necessarily use it in the same way. So sometimes it does make a difference. So what can you tell me about these two issues?
Well, you brought up a lot of good points. First of all, I think the issue that you mentioned that, you know, we're seeing more concern with people not having enough vitamin D in their bodies, particularly living in these northern climates where we know that vitamin D is important for a lot of things. You mentioned maybe, you know, helps decrease MS risk. Certainly we know it may play a role in certain cancers or colon. And of course, we know it's important for bone strength and bone density. And so I think when we look at vitamin D in particular, that's something that is not typically tested in the blood, but particularly if you might be at risk for problems like osteoporosis or you're you know, already heading that way, then it's something that needs to be tested, and you often have to ask your physician to test that. When you look at the type of vitamin D we do take in, people may take in 100% in a multivitamin, or if it's with calcium, often you have vitamin D added to that too. Typically, that is D3 because usually that's better absorbed generally. But like you say, you don't always know exactly what you're getting with that. I'm just pulling up a couple things that I have too. And it says here in one of my vitamin and mineral supplement reviews, vitamin D3 supplements are sold in single preparations or multivitamins. In general, these do raise blood levels of vitamin D and other measures of D better than D2 supplements. And so most of the studies that I know of have really been done on the vitamin D3, which is, again, just one form of it. So that does make a lot of sense to ask what kind of D that is. In a lot of fortified foods or different products, sometimes you can't tell what kind was added to it. And so I think the thing is, when you're taking the actual supplement, probably you do want this best absorbed form. Another vitamin that's important for that is vitamin E, because a natural source of vitamin E we know is better absorbed than a synthetic source of vitamin E. So that's something you can look for on a vitamin E supplement as well, is really getting in the natural source of vitamin E. And I think, you know, it brings up a really big issue of what's absorbable and what's not. That's really the big question. There are a lot of people who do think, well, synthetic formulas are just not going to be as well absorbed. I think certain vitamins, maybe vitamin C, for example, or some other vitamins, will be absorbed really well in a lot of forms. And so some of them may not, you know, make that much of a difference. We see a lot more vitamins and minerals in general, multis in particular, that are 2 or 3 doses a day, because we do think that maybe if you're getting more during the day at different times, you might have better absorbability. And one thing I've noticed lately, too, we do know in a multivitamin, if you add a whole lot of large minerals like calcium, let's say you've got a lot of calcium, a lot of iron, other things, they're not going to be very well absorbed because those minerals are too big and they really fight for absorption sites. And so that's a case where maybe more of a lot of things in a particular vitamin is not necessarily good. It may not help you a lot more, in which case you take 100% and maybe even take that twice a day instead of taking a lot more at one time. But certainly D and E would be two that you might think, yeah, these probably more natural forms would be very important. Another issue that this brings up, too, is can we formulate in synthetic form a lot of these phytochemicals that people are now taking in a supplemental form? For example, lycopene and some of these other ones, I think there's still a lot we need to learn about whether those can be just as well absorbed in synthetic form as they can from, for example, cooked tomatoes, which we know is a really absorbable form of the antioxidant lycopene. And so there are a lot of differences there, too. One review that I recently read from December really talked about just reiterating the importance of this idea of a lot of fruits and vegetables, 5 to 9 servings a day, or if you look at maybe trying to get 3 or 4 cups of fruits and vegetables a day, and how important that is, because then we actually have other, what we call cofactors, that help you absorb those nutrients when you eat those foods. And so it all kind of goes back to that, saying that, okay, that needs to be our base. And then other things like D, we just may not get enough of. We've really got to look at supplementing. Or E is another one. Difficult to get enough E because it would take a lot of fat in the diet to get enough E, because that's basically where most of the E is found.
I thought it was interesting to learn that vitamin D isn't only for the things that you mentioned, but it also makes a difference in muscle strength.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are elderly and living inside all the time and living, for instance, in a nursing home, you may have very, very low, extremely low levels of vitamin D,
mm-hmm.
not getting any sunshine at all. And that can affect You know, somebody might say, well, somebody is 90 years old, they don't have to worry too much more about osteoporosis. Maybe they do or don't. But falling, because muscles are not adequately strong, is a whole additional thing I hadn't thought about.
Right, exactly. And I think then you combine that with perhaps not eating as much protein because it's hard to chew meat. It's hard to get maybe, you know, just not as much taste for protein foods. So you have that, which affects muscle wasting. And sometimes a lot of those things together that I think really go, we miss a lot of that. I think that's very true.
So if we have elderly relatives in nursing homes, we should be checking to see whether their vitamin D levels have been checked. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. This is the Afternoon Magazine this afternoon. We're talking with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She's with us today, a Tuesday, because yesterday, Monday, was a holiday, New Year's Day. If you'd like to talk with Susan, you can give us a phone call this afternoon. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Is it best to think about supplements as kind of just an insurance policy? Basically, we should be striving to, you know, eat a sound diet, get out and get a little sunshine, get a little exercise.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of this whole balance and variety is really important there. And I do think, I mean, you know, we used to hear the term, well, you don't need a multivitamin, you don't need extra vitamins or minerals if you're eating pretty well. Well, I think it's pretty difficult to get everything you need most of the time. And so I think for sure, I would certainly say for sure a multivitamin, multimineral for your age and gender is kind of a basis, you know, basic thing everyone should have. And then looking at some of these other vitamins and minerals, for example, if you know you're at risk for heart disease, then you've got to make sure you have enough B vitamins in your multivitamin. Maybe you take an extra B vitamin complex that's a little bit higher in Bs because we know that those are very important for heart function and very important to keep certain levels of inflammation down in the body. And so that may be important. Some people may need extra C because certainly that's a powerful antioxidant that can be beneficial. And then we do look at E, and calcium is a mineral that's often low in people's diets. And so and certainly in my practice, as it's progressed through the years, we've learned a lot more about these vitamins and minerals and these other nutrients. And when I do dietary analysis or dietary intakes with my clients, I find that they're just typically there are some things that are typically quite low. And I think you look on the spectrum, the one caller had a really good point. We get a little bit older. We often don't eat as much. It's often harder to eat. It may become even more important at that age. We know it's really important if you're thinking of becoming pregnant. We know how important that is because you're building all these cells and during pregnancy and lactation and those kinds of things. And if you're burning a lot of extra calories as an athlete, maybe you don't need a lot more supplements, but you do need a lot more food. And so and maybe you probably need more protein. And so there are certain times when some of these nutrients are just extremely important. And we do have a lot of data to support the fact that a lot of people, when they get older, for the bone issue in particular, there have just been years of not enough calcium and not, maybe not enough protein and not enough vitamin D. And it's really hard to get that back. And so I think what we're going to see is just much more attention to, in different life cycles or lifespans where you are, really what's needed. And to not be afraid to supplement if that's something that you do need, but to not go crazy on it either, because you certainly can go overboard and then we have a problem with malabsorption of some of these nutrients because you got too much of something and then you're going to not absorb as much of something else and that can become a problem.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Someone on a cell phone on line one. Hi.
Thank you. Vitamin E is an egg versus vitamin D. You were saying that you can't get enough vitamin D, right? Not vitamin E.
Well, both,
is that correct?
Both vitamin E and vitamin D are two vitamins that are more difficult to get. I would say both of them can be difficult to get enough of. Now, vitamin D, maybe if you have a lot of vitamin D fortified foods and you are getting out in the sun and that may not be as much of a problem. We know, again, as you get older, that's a little bit harder to do and harder to get in. Vitamin E is one of those foods that's found mainly, if you look at the food sources, that's going to be mainly in oils and nuts and seeds and things like that. And so particularly if someone's not getting as much of these fats, if they're trying to watch their diet, if they're trying to cut down on calories, for whatever reason, that could be a problem getting enough in. And so,
okay.
So we
but
do look at that.
If I eat enough nuts and things, then I don't need to take more than 400 a day, would you say?
Well, I think there's, you know, in vitamin E, I should say, too, there's certainly some controversy because there have been some studies on cardiovascular health where people have taken mega doses or large doses, 400 to 800 IUs were typical in a lot of these studies. And most cardiologists and most physicians and health practitioners now say, well, there's probably not the benefit we hoped for taking those large amounts. There might even be some downsides.
Right.
And so maybe even, you know, I would be... I would say, well, look at vitamin E in your diet if it looks low, maybe even 100 to 200 IUs, which is not as much by any means, but it's still more, and it's still going to, you know, get you a little bit extra vitamin E. And probably from a safety standpoint, that's not going to be a problem. And so I think, you know, that's a reasonable thing to think about doing and to discuss with your own physician based on your own medical concerns. And whether that would be beneficial for you. But what we do know is that if you go, particularly if you're going on a low-fat diet, there are certain nutrients like vitamin E that might be cut down to a point where then you're not getting the benefit from E that you would normally get on a typical diet.
Okay. That seems reasonable. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Southern LaSalle County on line 4. Hi.
Hi there. Happy New Year. I have been taking until I ran out a vitamin. It's the name of it is called Clinical Nutrients for Women, and it has cherry and it has cranberry and quite a bunch of other things that are unusual. And I found that I can never remember what I've got, but anyway, I would swell around the ankles in the past. When I started taking this, boy, I've never had a problem since. But the only trouble is, a friend got these out of town for me, and she got them through a chiropractor. He refuses to sell them except to his patients. How can I get a hold of something like this?
Yeah, that's, well, a couple things I would say. Sometimes those types of supplements are sold through programs where you don't see them on the typical shelves, but they're online. They might be companies that sell directly to chiropractors or physicians or dietitians or so on, but they also might be available online. So that would be one thing. If you have access or someone has access to the internet,
could ask my fellow I get my medicines from.
Mm-hmm, to look for that online, or maybe even ask your pharmacist, because that may be a way that pharmacists could get it too. Sometimes health practitioners will just sell certain things, and that'll be a marketing tool to get in to see the person too. So I don't know if that's the case in this.
Well,
in this
I have
case
been
or not.
A chiropractor in the past, but I don't really feel I want to make an appointment just for that.
And the other thing you could also do is you know, if you have the bottle of it, you could bring that in, and there are probably other products that are very similar to that, that would have similar ingredients, and that would be something. You could bring into a pharmacist or a natural food store and could look at that to find if there's a similar product. A lot of these natural, let's say like you're saying cherry and cranberry and some of these other maybe fruit and vegetable extracts, celery, for example, sometimes they really do help with diuresis. And so there were one or more compounds in that product that probably really helped you.
Yeah, really wonderful, really.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I haven't quit vitamins, but I've been taking this high-potency multivitamin, multimineral, and they're claiming that they've got a lot more of some of these things than Centrum Silver, which is highly advertised.
Right, right. There are a lot of those out there, and I think what's tricky is to figure out what you really need, what was really working in that other supplement, which is sometimes hard to do, but they're probably, you know, if I were to look at those exact contents, could probably decipher, you know, most likely what it was in there that was being helpful to you. And it might even be an extract that you got on itself that really was helpful.
Well, I had asked before, it wasn't you on the program, but someone else one time, and I had said to them that ever since I had heard that folic acid, you shouldn't take it around the time you were going to have tests because it throw the tests off. And this person told me they never heard of such a thing, so I quit paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this same person had mentioned about the cherry, putting cherry stuff under your tongue, which I've never seen. But that's what clued me on to using this cherry. And thank you very much, and I'll keep listening.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener, a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Hi, I'm pretty well, and I've suffered from sort of jaw muscle tension and back tension for quite a while, probably 10 or 15 years or so. And recently I was taking a kind of a workout supplement, creatine monohydrate, and it was amazing how all my sort of jaw and back tension from the last 10 years just sort of disappeared while taking it. However, one of the side effects of that is that it kind of can lead to depression. I kind of found myself, my mood being altered, so I kind of had to quit taking it, and I'm slowly getting the jaw tension back, and I wondered if there's anything else you recommended that might have that same effect.
That's interesting. I have a lot of clients who take creatine or who are interested in creatine, and I've never heard that's been helpful for that kind of thing, but so that's really good to know that that was beneficial.
I mean, phenomenal.
I don't know that I know of anything in particular. You know, it sounds like, you know, creatine works in a lot of different ways. It increases ATP or energy in the muscle, and the main thing it's studied for is to help with muscle strength and power, of course, which you probably know, you know, to help with exercising or help with a muscle strength in general, and perhaps even recovery. So it may have been helpful in that way, you know, in terms of muscle in your complete body, but I don't really know. It's really being researched for a lot of different things. I wish I knew of something that was similar to that, that maybe would give you that benefit. I really don't. One thing that you might want to think of, and I don't know if this is the case with you, with a lot of my clients who do take creatine, because you have to be so much more aware of the fluid you take in, because if you don't, you can have problems with cramping, that a lot of my clients, I think, end up being much more hydrated when they take it, because they know they have to be.
Sure.
And so that's something I would at least think about in your case. You know, if you're, were you more hydrated then because you're more aware of it? Sometimes if we're more hydrated in general, we have less muscle tension because our cells are more hydrated and so on. And I don't know if that played any role for you, but it's something to consider and make sure you stay really hydrated as well. And then, of course, we know with jaw and muscle tension, some of that is of course, could be, you know, related to stress and other things, too, looking at that. But I would probably consider also looking, if you haven't already, you know, working with a good massage therapist, because they may have other ideas or other things that you could do as well.
Yeah, I've tried that. It's been, like I said, it's been like 15 years.
Yeah.
Stuff, and it was just shocking how just within about 5 days, it just all just evaporated. It was crazy.
Okay. One thing I might suggest, too, is maybe looking at some of the websites that do talk more specifically about supplements in case there's something on some of those. And one of them would be supplementwatch.com. You can actually put in some, ask for reviews on different types of concerns. And that's just www.supplementwatchaltogether.com. And it's a non-commercial website. It'd be very interesting kind of to see. You might find some things in there that I'm not aware of.
Okay. Well, great.
Good luck.
Thanks for your help.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited. Other questions, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. What about an old-fashioned cup of herbal tea?
Exactly. I mean,
there's all kinds of teas out there, and there are all kinds of claims out there, and
Right. Researchers
are working on some of the, you know, what some of the, what would you call the ingredients, the active ingredients
Right. That
are in teas. But that.
Yeah, I mean, there are some teas out there that are kind of tension relief teas or teas that are more relaxation.
I suppose, too, just in the act of sitting down and having a cup of tea or making yourself a pot of tea.
And sometimes, you know, another thing we do know when we are working out, and I think especially lifting, where you're really focusing on your muscles and you're training your muscles and you're working out, I think sometimes we generally, you know, that has a side effect of helping us relax other times during the day because you've pushed yourself physically. And sounds like that caller really exercises well and things like that, too. And
well, that's one of the things that, you know, in relaxation exercises, they actually have you tense and relax.
Mm-hmm.
And they have you do that, you know, head to toe.
Right.
Of a thing.
Right. That's where maybe for this call or other people, even looking really closely at yoga, of course, which can be really beneficial to learn how your body reacts and what to do physically and training your body to to be in the different
might
foods.
Be useful.
Exactly.
As well. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition, usually on the first Monday of the month. She's with us today, a Tuesday, because yesterday, Monday, was a holiday. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we'll have a little extra time today because the markets are closed. For a day of mourning for former President Gerald Ford, whose funeral was this morning. And let me again say 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about nutrition in the news. Mm-hmm. What's new? What's something that you would like to draw our attention to?
Well, one thing that's been, of course, we've heard a lot about the last few years, the different types of carbohydrate and blood sugar regulation. And you know, early on, we really seemed to be that blood sugar regulation was most important for people with diabetes. If you had diabetes, if you had high blood sugars, then of course, we know it's important to manage those and try to prevent long-term problems from diabetes and certainly just on a daily basis, feel good and keep your blood sugars in good level. But one of the things that's been coming out lately that we've heard a lot about, and there was a review in the December 2006 issue of Environmental Nutrition, which is a really good newsletter that kind of updates us on, okay, what are some of the recent studies, what have come out, and written by dietitians. So it's very practical in terms of what to do. So there was a really good article about blood sugar tips, basically what can we do and why it's important probably for all of us to be managing our blood sugar throughout the day. And for most people, probably their bodies don't go way up and down, but we're finding that it's also important to kind of really try to keep it more at
an
even keel.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a review in here that talks a bit about maybe what are things we can do. And so it goes through some simple things, makes a lot of sense. But if we look at that, it talks about glycemic index or glycemic load. We usually think of glycemic index as the effect a food has on your blood sugar. So 50 grams of a food, how much does that increase your blood sugar level? And so foods that are lower glycemic index or have a lower effect on the blood sugar in your body, we think tend to be foods that you do want to include more often, not necessarily the only food you eat, but foods that you might include more often. So one of the goals here is to include at least one low glycemic index carbohydrate at every meal. And those would be things like, I always think about chewy carbohydrates, things like beans and barley and whole grains, bran cereal. I have a new cereal that I'm eating now that's one of those whole grain ones, and it takes a long time to chew. And that's a good sign. And there's a lot of seeds in there and a lot of hulls, and that's actually just a really good sign. So, you know, those types of foods, oatmeal. We always think of oatmeal. You know, you look at oatmeal and you cook that up, it's very gummy, kind of like barley. Mm-hmm. It's so gummy. And we know those foods not only can really affect blood sugar, but also have a role in maybe decreasing blood cholesterol levels. So these gummy fibers tend to bind some of the bile acids in the body and keep our perhaps blood cholesterol levels down too. Peas and beans. I had black-eyed peas. Some friends made black-eyed peas for the New Year
tradition. Yeah.
And so, of course, that was great food. Black-eyed peas would be good with every meal. Quinoa, rye bread, sourdough bread because of the acidity affects the glycemic index. You know, whole grains, things like that. And even milk products, even low-fat milk actually is a pretty low glycemic index food. And so not necessarily, I don't really subscribe to saying all eating just all low glycemic index foods, but knowing that maybe something at your meal, this makes sense, is a lower glycemic index. Choosing whole grain bread. We've talked a lot about that in past shows, mm-hmm. You know, really looking for higher fiber grains. Choosing things like for your morning cereal, the oats or the higher fiber cereals. Things like pasta. Now, here's an interesting tidbit. You know, if you have your pasta and it's cooked al dente, if it's not too overcooked, it tends to be a lower glycemic index carbohydrate. But the longer it's cooked, the higher the glycemic index. And so making sure that you're having it more low, you know, low GI, kind of not cooking it as long, or even doing things like having corn pasta or all the whole wheat pastas or whole grain pastas that are out there now. Many people I talk to like beans, but they hardly ever eat them. And so legumes, dried beans and peas, even vegetarian baked beans. Of course, those some of those have a lot of sugar added to them, but beans and peas in general, just really good to add in. You hear a lot about vinegar. You know, a lot of people take extra vinegar, have vinegar, cup full of vinegar with their, a vinegar top full of vinegar with their meals. And there is some evidence to show that that changes the acidity. It can slow blood sugar response because having that little bit of acid with your meals may affect the blood sugar response.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we kind of used to think of that as a wives' tale, but now it's being looked at more closely and there's some research behind it. Lower glycemic index snacks, thinking about, you know, a simple snack like fruit and nuts together. Again, adding fat with a meal or fiber from the nuts, that all decreases glycemic index or the effect of the blood sugar. Having protein with a meal. I was talking with a colleague not that long ago. We were talking about just a simple thing of adding protein to breakfast for kids, and we've talked about that before, and just the fact that it's not just quick energy up and down, mostly sugar that they might eat. It slows down the absorption and helps with all of us. And I think the other thing is just the amount that we eat. You know, the last number 10 on this was remembering portion control to manage blood sugars. And so we do know that the amount we eat at a meal, if we eat a whole lot at one meal, it's just really difficult.
Yeah, really. You just feel like...
Yeah.
You can't do anything but sit on the sofa after
exactly.
That. Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Let's talk with a caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have been to the doctor recently and got a cholesterol reading that's about 288. So they sent me some diet literature, foods to use, foods to avoid. I'm looking in this, it's some newsletter I get, Natural Healing, and... he's talking about red rice yeast extract, red yeast rice extract.
Yes.
Have you heard of people having success with that?
Yes, you can take that in a supplemental form, and there certainly are some studies behind that, that it may help decrease blood cholesterol levels. There was a review out, and this is another really good website if you can get on the web. There was a review out recently that looked at the cholesterol-lowering supplements and what really might be helpful. Where's the research, you know, what really has some substantiation behind it? And that website is Consumer Lab. It's just www.consumerlab.com. Mm-hmm. And you could look for a review on cholesterol-lowering supplements. And red rice yeast extract, along with stanol and sterol esters, which are basically a supplemental ester, a supplemental type of almost like a fat type, very similar to cholesterol in the look of it, but it's a type of supplement that you also find in foods like Benecol or Take Control, these esters. That's probably the one that has the most research behind it, in my estimation. And so that was listed kind of first along those lines. For cholesterol reduction, but also this extract has been shown in some studies to be beneficial.
And the niacin maybe is lower on the list?
Well, and niacin too certainly has been looked at. There, with niacin, well, with any of these supplements, you'd really want to use them and be monitored by your physician, have your lipids checked. Sometimes with niacin, there are some other side effects like flushing or becoming very warm and things like that. So that's, you know, I would think of these almost as medications that you'd want to have be monitored, but niacin in some cases can be beneficial too. You know, and a lot of times it's a combination. When I work with clients with high lipids, let's say someone at your level where, yes, you need to get those down for sure. You'd look at that and say, well, maybe we'd try one of these supplements. We'd also look at adding a lot of the gummy fibers. We'd also look at adding more monounsaturated fats, more nuts, more seeds, things that we think, you know, from studies also help bring down lipids. Uh-huh. And so maybe it's a combination of things you're doing diet-wise, looking at exercise, and also a supplement together that maybe in total you might be able to really get that down to where you maybe wouldn't have to take a medication.
Yes. I really appreciate your input.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line three. Good afternoon.
Oh, dear.
Hello, line three. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. You mentioned, or Susan Kundrat mentioned that sourdough was good. Now, what I'm asking is, I was at Strawberry Fields the other day, and they had, you know, the straight sourdough
mm-hmm.
with white flour, but then they also had a sourdough with whole wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose the one with whole wheat. Now, is there a significant difference between the two as far as getting more acid?
Well, I don't know if there's a big difference in the acid. I wouldn't think there would be a real big difference in the acid content because they would both be started
mm-hmm.
with the sourdough starter.
Yes.
And so I think if you could choose when the whole wheat bread's available sourdough, that mm-hmm. to me seems like it'd be the best choice. Because you
right.
get just like you did. You were really thinking because you got the whole grain, plus you got the benefit of the sourdough.
Yes.
So that, is probably one of the best choices you could make in terms of the bread.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Now we talk with a listener on line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I understand you mentioned niacin. Supposedly helps to raise the HDL. Is that correct?
Well, niacin has been shown to do that. It's also been shown to decrease LDL and
okay.
to decrease total cholesterol.
What's happened, I've been in and out of the car, so I've heard your program in 3 or 4 different segments. But the one on stress, my own personal experience has been, I don't know whether anyone, did you mention GARBA at all?
No, we didn't.
Okay, which I found very helpful, but you put it under your tongue. And I found that helpful at times. The other one is that Tai Chi. I found helpful, but I think the most powerful one I found was yoga,
mm-hmm.
especially the Iyengar, in terms of reducing stress or helping. So just as far as...